Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, hello, hello. Santa Barbara, it's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. I have the great honor of interviewing the Arantia Quartet. The Music Academy is featuring them. If you're listening and it's Friday, they're going to feature them tomorrow at 3. And not the Music Academy, sorry, the Santa Barbara Museum of Art. I'm confused because I'm speaking to the quartet from the Music Academy, and it's really interesting, the story of how they got together, how they formed, what they play, and I just have the great pleasure of introducing you to four members, and I want to tell you who they are. First of all, you have to correct me if I pronounce these wrong. Miyabi Henriksen. Did I say that right, Mirabi?
Yes, you did, yeah. Hello.
Okay, hello. She's first violin, and she is working on her Bachelor's of Art at Rice. Or no, you finished in 2019, right?
Oh, I'm currently studying my Bachelor's of Music, and I'll be graduating in 2 years.
There you go, okay. And so London Town Symphony Orchestra, winner, Young Artist Competition, first place winner, Peabody Youth Orchestra, Concerto Camp, many, many awards, and many, many, many performances under her belt. I have Stephen Song. Stephen?
Yes, that's
hello.
Correct.
Hello. Okay. Who is from Illinois? And where in Illinois, Stephen?
I'm from the Chicago area.
Where?
A suburb called Naperville. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I'm from Deerfield. So I know Naperville for sure. He's at Yale and 2023 semifinalist in Lipinski International Violin Competition and the quarterfinalist in Shanghai, Isaac Stern Camp, and he's a member of the Austin Civic Orchestra. Also, the Singapore Symphony Orchestra. And one of my questions that I want to ask Stephen, how does he balance, you know, two continents and performances when we get into the interview? I have Jason Lan with me from Taiwan, born in Taiwan. He's at the University of Texas, Austin.
Right, that's right. Are.
Hello, did I say your last name right?
Yeah, Lan, yeah.
Okay, all right, excellent. And I have, now this is, help me with this. Xinjie Ma?
Hi, this is Xinjie. Hi.
Okay, pronounce for me your name.
Xinjie. That's my first name.
Xinjie.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Okay. And he was born in China. He's at the New England Conservatory. He's working on his master's, or did you finish that already?
Not yet. Last year was my first year of my master.
Okay. The principal cellist with the New England Conservatory and New Music Ensemble, first prize in 2017, the Vienna International Music Competition. So these are the four fellows that are making up the quartet. And let me see who can tell me the story of how the Arantia Quartet evolved during the seminar that you are participating in at the Music Academy. Somebody volunteered to tell me the story of how y'all met.
All right. So we all, when applying for the Music Academy of the West, we requested to be considered for the string quartet seminar. And we had the honor to be chosen by the Talkash Quartet, who we worked alongside with. And they formed us as a group. And so we were just thrown in here from the first day, being stuck with each other for 7 hours in a whole day from the first day we arrived. And so from then we evolved and worked together every day. And so now we're here.
That's amazing. So you're considered fellows, and yeah. You were selected for the string quartet seminar, which was intensive 3 weeks training course. It focuses on string quartet and chamber music collaborations. And the great Takis Quartet was the director. And you had never played before you met in early June. And so here's my question. How did you know that you got, how did you, what clued you to the fact that you would be good together, the four of you? Sinjay, could you answer that for me?
Yeah, so basically, actually, that's a very hard challenge for all of us, because, you know, we just met each other like as strangers, like first of June. So yeah, it's indeed a challenge for us. So during the rehearsal, we met so many problems, also including like we have different interpretations for our music, like the every people has their own ideas for how you interpret music and how you do like everything, and how we rehearse, like everything's different. But I mean, that's the beauty of like how we cooperating during the, you know, summer festival. So we can see each other's personality and we can learn a lot from each other. So, I mean, problems are the beauty of, yeah, again. So, I mean, that's a very important thing for me, also for our member group, yeah.
It's interesting to me, you know, Richard, I love string quartets and I've been to many performances, many quartets along the years. And it's so interesting to see the interaction because there's no conductor, of course. You know, they're cluing each other by movement and by little furtive glances at each other. And it's really interesting to see the interactions. In some quartets, it's pretty blatant. In other quartets, they're really subtle with how they're, you know, how they're interacting, what they're sensing from each other, and how they're indicating how they're playing and feeling. It's very interesting. So I wanted to ask, maybe Stephen can answer this. How do you rate yourself, you know, on that scale of very obvious gestures and glances to the very subtle ones? How do you rate your quartet on the line of that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would actually say that most of us are actually more on the introverted side, and I would say I am myself. And that was one thing that the Takis Quartet, as members, they really encouraged us, because especially as a new group, they encourage us to actually show more gestures and to really show with our bodies how we felt about the music, and also explain it and engage in meaningful and productive conversations and how we felt about the music, and to try to come to a middle ground. And particularly playing like second violin is also very tricky too, because you often have to play with the first violin. So then you have to face the first violin, and then other times you're collaborating with viola or cello. So as the Takis Quartet really encouraged us to make eye contact and physical body gestures to show the music. So I really felt like I learned a lot in this process.
Okay, so but your quartet, so the question is to you, even if with your quartet, if one is very blatant, obvious gesturing, eye contact, and 10 is not so and very subtle, where would you put the four of you?
I would say we're maybe like a four-ish. I mean, I think that we bring very much our own selves into it, and we show our gestures, but I think that we kind of, just by playing more together, we've grown to just get used to each other's gestures, and I feel like we don't have to actually cue as much as in the beginning. Yeah. But I think Yeah, I wouldn't say we're like the most moving group, but especially in that we will play the Carrot Revolution, it was really encouraged that we grooved a lot as a group. And I think you'll see more of that in that piece in particular. But in other pieces, we've, I think we're a little bit more dialed back.
So let me explain, dear listener, what Stephen is talking about. So July 20th at 3 p.m., the quartet is performing Carrot Revolution. And I listened to it last night. And what he's saying is that it's an interesting piece of music for a quartet to play. I think you said groove on it. And I think that's, yeah, that's really, really a good description of it. And by the way, you are hearing that in and out of the breaks as we go in and out of the breaks. I want to reintroduce, this is Music Academy of the West Arancia Quartet. And they're pretty new. It's 2024 String Quartet Seminar Fellows. I have with me Mirabi Henriksen, violin, Stephen Song, violin, Jason Land, viola, and Shinje Ma, cello. And they're performing Gabriella Smith's Carrot Revolution, originally commissioned by an art museum. And it's a patchwork of contrast, really, is how best I can explain it to you, but you'll hear a little of it as we go in and out. It's a piece that makes me think of almost like a presentation like Mussorgsky, you know, pictures at an exhibition where you're actually obviously it's music, but for some reason it makes me think of visual perception. Am I on to something there, you guys, or?
Yeah, most definitely. I feel that the music is not as obvious as the standard classical repertoire that we're used to, and it takes more imaginative, mindful practice to really put the music alive and to really have the groove speak out. And so I like that you mentioned a visual component, because like we were talking about with moving and cueing, definitely with what Stephen was saying, when we perform Carrot Revolution, a lot of visual movement and connection and engagement with each other is very crucial.
So I want to know, when we get back from the break, we're going to go to quick break now, but when we get back from the break, how, if you know anything about the title, how Carrot Revolution came to be called Carrot Revolution. But if you are listening and you're interested, the performances at the McCormick Gallery at the Santa Barbara Museum of Art on State Street, it's free with museum admission. Saturday, July 20th at 3 p.m., the Arancia Quartet is performing the Carrot Revolution. That's very, very cool music, which you'll hear a little bit of it in and out of the break. Hey, Richard, let's go to quick break, and then I want to hear why the piece is called Carrot Revolution. And then I want to take the opportunity, this next section, of asking each one of you individually how you came to discover your instrument.
All right.
So we'll think about that a little when we get back from the break. Don't turn that down. Back with the Arancia Quartet in 2 seconds. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I have the pleasure of speaking with the Arancia Quartet who are performing Carrot Revolution at Santa Barbara Museum of Art Saturday, July 20th at 3 p.m. And I have a question before we went to break. Why Carrot Revolution? Why? What's the title mean?
So Gabriella Smith came with the title of Carrot Revolution when she heard a quote by the artist Cezanne, and the quote was, "The day will come when a single freshly observed carrot will start a revolution." And right after this quote, she immediately knew she would name it Carrot Revolution. And I think this piece It was commissioned by the Barnes Foundation in Philadelphia, and it was inspired by a collection of visual art. And this piece really just is like an amalgamation of so many different genres into one. And it's it really is what you make of it. I think it's the title, it could mean an actual carrot, like the vegetable, or it could mean something else. And I think it's just, that's what's special about it.
You know, Stephen, when I was trying to think, you know, what that might mean, and there's a famous quote, I think it's Jasper Johns, a visual artist, that you can't have too much yellow. And I was thinking of that, and I was thinking, oh, okay, so you can't have too much orange.
Yeah.
But no, that's not, that's, it's from Matisse saying, or it's when the observation of a lowly carrot might spark a revolution.
Yep.
Okay, that's very cool. Okay, now I want to hear from each of you how you discovered your instruments. And could I start with Jason? Jason Love, how did you discover your viola?
Yes, I actually do have a long story about how I picked the viola, but I'll make it short and interesting. So I actually started with the piano, and then piano was actually my major for like a year or two. And then in Taiwan, in the music school where we actually have to pick like a secondary instrument, and then the order of, you know, picking the instrument was actually based on the ranking of how, you know, when you apply for the school. And unfortunately, I wasn't in an upper rank. So when it comes to my turn to choose an instrument, you know, the popular instruments like violin, cello, or like flute, you know, all those popular instruments were chosen. And there was only one slot of the viola was actually available. And then both myself and my parents was like, what's a viola? And then my mom was like, well, I'm not so sure what that is, but like it might not be something heavy to carry. How about you just, that instrument? I was like, sure. And I chose an instrument. And then because usually people started with the violin, and then later they might switch to the viola. And since then, I kind of just stick with it. And then after a year or two, I studied the viola, and I just switch. Like, I mean, switch as in, you know, viola as my major instrument. So since then, I've been playing the viola, and that was...
It's so interesting. It's interesting. So you came out of piano, and then there was, you had to take a secondary instrument, and right. The major, quote unquote, stringed instruments were taken. And so you ended up with viola, and it ended up being your instrument. How fantastic.
Yeah, I guess I would just never escape from the viola, I guess.
Well, it chose you, didn't it?
Yeah, I was chosen. Yeah.
Yeah, it chose you. That's the glory of it. Yeah. Let's see, Shinjay, on the cello. Okay, so I have to just say, dear listener, you are listening, but you're not seeing. And Richard's got us where we can actually see each other. And Shinjay is a beautiful looking person. And not very big. And when you think of what Jason just said, that his mom said, well, a viola, it couldn't be that heavy. It's easy to carry. Cello is different. Sinjay, how did you discover your gift on the cello?
Yeah, actually, same story here. Like in China, if you have like, you know, certain hobbies, like if you can play piano, if you can play a certain instrument, you will get like some extra score for your examinations in school. So that's a pretty like good thing for every student. So at first I started with piano as well. Also, actually my mom forced me to learn piano back then. But after like 2 years studying of piano, that was very occasionally. So my teacher was said like, oh, there are too many students are playing piano. So what about try something else? So I randomly picked cello because, you know, not very much students studied cello back then. So, and at first I didn't want to be a like very professional musician as my future career, because that will be super tough and I never thought about it. But after I started learning cello, it's like I was so obsessed with its sound. So it's like very deep, very fascinating for me. So I was trying to apply for Shanghai Conservatory for middle school. Yeah, so very luckily I got in. So that's how I became a cellist. Yeah. So right now, it's not like something my mom forced me to do. It's really my career and I love it. Yeah.
So Richard's heard this a million times, but I'm very proud of my mother too. She's the first female graduate from Juilliard in conducting. You know, she's born in the 1920s, and there weren't, I mean, female conductors were not heard of. And she went on to conduct voice, but her instrument was piano, and she insisted that I study, and she insisted that I listen, and took me to many. Well, I grew up in outside of Chicago, as you know, Stephen. But we were always at the Lyric or the Symphony Orchestra, and my mom actually was accompanist for the Lyric in Chicago, so I got to hang out with some wonderful musicians. And what my mom actually left me was relative pitch. She had perfect pitch. And it was highly annoying growing up with someone with perfect pitch, especially when I was studying piano and, you know, for years. This was highly aggravating. And I'll just close the segment by telling you, when I was young, we had alarm clocks that you had to wind. So, you know, you'd wind your alarm clock, set it so you can get up in time for school. And if it wasn't wound tight enough, my mom could hear the sound going. And she would pull her hair out. It hurt her to hear that, and she would turn that alarm off upstairs, you know. Yeah. So people with perfect pitch can be highly annoying. and do any of you four have this? Yes, okay. You all do. Yes, okay. So you're all highly annoying. No, just joking. I mean, it's a blessing and a curse. Let's go to a quick break, and I want to reintroduce the Aroncia Quartet, their performance, Carrot Revolution, at the Santa Barbara Museum of Art. Young people, some of them not out of college, extremely talented, and just met in June of this year and formed the quartet that we're talking to today. A real synchronicitous meeting. Don't turn that down, back a second. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and I always love to have young people on the program because I'm just amazed at, you know, before they're even out of their teens, they're so accomplished. And this is the case with the members of the Aroncia Quartet. I'm speaking to Mirabi Henriksen, violin, Stephen Song, violin, Jason Lan, viola, Shinjae Ma, cello. And together they make up the Aroncia Quartet. They're performing at the Santa Barbara Museum of Art on Saturday the 20th. And I wanted to speak to them about their journey. And I found out looking into this that they were fellows at the String Quartet Seminar, which was an honor in itself. an intensive three-week training course at the Music Academy of the West in Montecito. They're focused on string quartet and chamber music, and they were directed, led by the studies by the Tajes Quartet, a marvelous, marvelous quartet. They had never played before together. And all of a sudden they realize we have what it takes to become a quartet. And I think that's amazing. It evolved, the quartet evolved during the seminar, which was 3 weeks long. Now, we started the last session by asking how each member discovered their instrument, and I have not heard from Miyabi. How did you discover violin?
So actually, similarly to, you know, Jason and Shijia about the piano, I was given the violin by my dad when I was four as an extracurricular activity alongside ballet. So these are two activities I invested time in throughout my childhood, but kind of saw it as a chore equivalent to school, you know, because of my age. And so actually I did not consider music being part of my career until I received acceptances from colleges. I applied to both academic and music conservatories just because my teacher was like, you come this far, you might as well try. And I was like, I don't know what I do academically. So after receiving that honor to be have the option to pursue music as a career, I started really contemplating like, this is possible for me. And so starting college 2 years ago, I have really dived deeper into the arts, into what music could mean to me in my life. And it's been such a great honor to have the privilege of pursuing the arts as my career.
Now you're at Rice, right? Aren't you at Rice in Houston? Yeah, yeah. And so you're, and you're 2 years, did I get that right? You're 2 years into your BA?
Yes, I'm going to be a junior in the fall.
Excellent, excellent. So young and so talented. It's amazing. So, and we did, let's see, we spoke with Jason. Stephen, we haven't asked you how you discovered the violin.
So I have a similar story. I started piano when I was five, and then my parents, when I was six, asked me if I wanted to start another instrument. And so I said yes, and I said the violin. And I played both instruments till I was about 13 years old. And at that point, I had to choose one because I wanted to do it as a major, and I wanted to really focus in on one. And it was a really hard choice because I played both pretty equally up until that point. But then I decided on the violin. And I think the main reason was for the beautiful sound that the violin creates. And I think also, I just like how personable it is in that you can play in an orchestra or you can play in chamber music. And that also as a violin, you know, it's a string instrument and there's a whole string family. And playing a string quartet is like one of the most amazing things you can do. And so I just thought that maybe this would be the best choice for me. And so music has always been a constant in my life, but violin is definitely like my most favorite instrument and what drives me every day.
Okay, so I have to say, I was laughing inside when you said, as a child, you discovered violin for the beautiful sound it can make. I insisted that my son study violin. I can assure you that the first 3 years, there was no beautiful sound heard from that instrument. So, yeah, I just had to laugh inside. Okay, now I have another question for you guys, and I want to also make it round robin. And perhaps we'll start with Jason. So all four of you have competed. I looked into that and saw all four of you in which competitions, et cetera. And competitions are part of a young classical musician's building their own career. when we introduce a classical musician, we give the list. These are the competitions that were won or placed, etc. And what their credentials are is a lot of times the competitions that they've been involved in. So that's the background to this question. And I want to know in one or two sentences from each of you, what you focus on mainly, the main thing or things you focus on to prepare for a major competition. What you focus on. Jason, can you answer that?
Yeah, definitely. Preparing competition is always one of the most difficult thing for me because, you know, first step is preparing the recording, right? So in the recording, in the pre-screening process, you wanted to show the best out of yourself, but then you don't want it just to be perfect. You wanted to show your musical side too. So for me, what I prepare is, of course, you know, intonation, you know, all the technique has to be, you know, on the spot, but at the same time, showing my personal, you know, musical voice. I think that's what I really focus on when I'm preparing for the competition.
I'm interested to know, Stephen, how do you prepare? Because it was you in the beginning of the interview that said that that you four of you came together and you had a similar personality trait, which was introversion. Okay, so with that in mind, how do you prepare for a competition?
Yeah, similarly to Jason, I think a competition, it's a big motivation tool to drive you to grow, I think, technically, but also musically. And I think ultimately, what's most important for me, even in a competition setting, is to have your own personal voice. Because if you try to play in a way that just tries to satisfy the judges, it will come across that way that you're kind of not giving your full self, and it won't feel as genuine as if you really just try to give your own voice. And I think the best judges in the world are the ones that can appreciate that, whether or not they agree or like all the ideas. And I guess related to like the introversion, I feel like our quartet, if we were to prepare for a competition, I feel like we would have to look deep into like still discovering our own voices more. And I think we all have a lot to bring. And so I think we haven't actually considered entering a competition as a quartet, but I think really that's the most important thing, is to say something on your own.
So it's a personal voice that you focus on, and a personal presentation that you focus on. And I want to ask Shinday the same question, but I'm also interested, on the heels of what Stephen said, to ask Sinche, how do you recognize talent in fellow competitors?
Yeah, like how I prepare the competition.
Yeah.
Like for me, a little bit different from them, because, you know, for my personality, I'm kind of like extrovert. So sometimes on the stage, I will be like too much passion. So for me, the problem is how can I stabilize myself on the stage? So when I practice, I'll always like imagine I'm on stage. So it will be like super different for me. So I can get some certain accuracy from my playing. So I can stabilize myself, like, let me calm down. So yeah, that's how I practice and do the preparation for competition. Yes.
Excellent. And when you are competing, let's say you're competing against people that you've heard play before.
Mm-hmm.
My question to you was, how do you recognize talent?
Oh, okay. Actually, for every contestants of competitions, they all of them have talent for music, definitely. But for me, how I recognize talents, like, I I was trying to like understand their interpretations of music, so I can like you know, read something from their music. So that's how I do that. Yeah.
And did I ask Miyabi how she prepares?
Oh, not yet. I can go now though.
Sure.
So everything that's already being said is so great. Like, I don't think I can top that. Like, those are the personal voice and also finding that stability between being so expressive. Because for me personally, I relate to what she just said. I have a tendency to want to express and to be convincing, because that is what they are looking for in competition, is an accomplished artist who is very intentional with their craft. And so, but I also, you know, with adrenaline and being presented in front of all these people, like that convincing energy I want to produce can be too much for it to hinder my performance. So, but also you don't want to be too calm and too stable. So right now I'm actually focused on discovering that balance for myself and what mindfulness it takes. And definitely with what you were saying about recognizing talent among the other competitors, like each musician is so, like, it's so inspiring to see the talent. And sometimes it can really get to your head with imposter syndrome. And what I am learning is important is to really just embrace each individual journey and just to embrace where you're at and to accept that and let the judges make their decision. We all can present how we feel about the music, and at the end of the day, it's the subjective opinion.
So did I ask each one of you now how you prepared? Did I cover all four of you? Yes. Okay. So Richard, Mirabi just brought up a really interesting point, and I wonder if you had a guest on at any point in time on your show. Richard has a show that's called Tell Me Your Story. And Richard, she brought up this term, imposter syndrome. Have you heard of this before?
Imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Interesting. I'll be honest with you, I really haven't.
Okay, it's something I can speak to. And Mirabi, I have to say, we have a common background in that I studied ballet for years and was in professional companies, etc. And one of my questions to you would be how your ballet training has influenced your musicianship. But I can probably guess at that. But imposter syndrome is where you're thinking, amongst all this talent, I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be here. You know, this is everything is, I'm just being a phony. I'm a fake. I shouldn't be here. So she's talking about it is a problem when you have so many talented people around you. It is a problem. So I want to know, especially from Stephen, I want this next question to go to Stephen. What does the daily life of an orchestral musician entail? And how does a musician handle travel? Now, I couch that because he's performed with Austin Orchestra and Singapore. Okay, so you can't do it both together, and it involves a great deal of travel. So my question would be, how does a musician handle travel, and what is the life like that you lead, Stephen?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would just like to clarify, it's actually Jason who is playing with those orchestras. I play with some other groups, but yeah, I just wanted to clarify that first.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay. So, but Stephen, you travel too, do you not? Why did I get that in my head? Let me look.
Yeah, I mean, I'm based in the States, but I play in a few symphonic groups, and I would love to answer the question. I mean, I think that orchestral playing is something different than chamber playing and solo playing. I think orchestral playing can be really grueling if you join a professional orchestra, because you're thrown a new program every week. And then you basically have like three rehearsals or four rehearsals and like three concerts. And then the next week is the same thing over and over again. And it can be tiring emotionally, physically, people get injured. sitting down for hours a day playing. And I think what's most important is that you have to really love the orchestral music and love collaborating with 100 other musicians. And even if you don't agree with the conductor, or if you don't love your stand partner, for example, that you still, for the purpose of the music, willing to contribute yourself to it. And that takes a real genuine love for music and for orchestral music and collaborating. So that can be hard. You know, some people don't, maybe aren't the biggest fan of another member of the group, but you still have to find a way to present these concerts. And so, yeah. And I think for the travel thing, I mean, I think traveling is probably like the greatest part and the least best part about being a musician. I think it's amazing that you can play in all these wonderful places and be in different parts of the world, and you can be close to so many friends because you visit so many different places. But at the same time, it's like very, very grueling. And it's probably the hardest part about being a professional musician, if you do have to travel a lot, is all the time spent in like the airports and being alone and just having jet lag. And it's like a real thing you have to deal with.
Ah, God, that does sound, the way you couch it. And on the heels of that, I apologize. Jason, a question for you. You are in Austin. And yeah. My first draft of my questions was, okay, how does Jason, who is a classical musician, how does he handle Austin? I mean, we have such ideas of Austin and the kind of music that comes out of Austin. And I'm thinking, well, maybe Jason just hates that scene, or maybe he really likes that scene. So a question for you, Jason, how do you like the music scene in Austin?
You know, I found it very interesting where, you know, Austin has, well, it's a very new city. You know, we all know that it's a very newly, you know, emerging city, but it has such diverse genre of music. You know, Austin or Texas is famous for the wind band, right? And so as the, you know, the pop bands, there are a lot of pop, you know, groups are actually born in Austin, and then they develop later. But also, I also have encountered a lot of audience, just like the, you know, the audience in Santa Barbara, where they are very passionate about the classical music. You know, when I perform in Austin, you know, mostly the tickets, it's always full house, and people are just as excited as they are for, you know, the other types of music. They're very engaged, they loved it. And yeah, so I enjoy performing there. And yeah.
And do you go to concerts that are not classical in Austin?
Occasionally, yeah, sometimes.
Excellent, excellent. So another question, and I want to go back here to Sinjay. I love what he said about you know, the expressiveness and the true artist bringing their own personality to the stage. And of course, what you're talking about is Music Academy and the wonderful musicians at the Music Academy. How do you handle being around so much talent, Sinjay?
Yeah, actually, I feel like, you know, be surrounded by all these amazing peer musicians is the most important part of my summer festival, because we are making friends here. Also, like, we are building new connections and very deep connections with each other, like every single day. So I mean, that's the meaning for this summer festival. Not only for making friends, also I was so inspired by them. Not only the way how they play the music, also the way how they communicate with others, also like their lifestyle, like also like including everything, etc. So like also for including their personality. From each of them, you can learn a lot. Yeah.
Well, except I think one of your fellows there mentioned, oh, it was Stephen who said, Yes, being a classical musician consistently on the road with an orchestra can be grueling if you can't stand your standmate. Oh, yeah. So tell me, just in 2 seconds, tell me about that. Oh, Richard's saying we have to wind it up. What if you don't like the fellow that's next to you? What do you do then? Anyway, I want to thank the Arancia Quartet for joining me today. And they're performing Gabriela Smith's Carrot Revolution, Santa Barbara Museum of Art, July 20th at 3 p.m. And I will see you there, guys. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you
so much. Thank you.